discover the power of ideas every day online at prodos.com. Sometime last year, I attended a meeting of the Melbourne Adam Smith Club and met in the audience Roger Kerr from the highly influential free market business lobby group, the New Zealand Business Roundtable. Well, I went and introduced myself and gave Roger Kerr a leaflet about this show and also one of my stickers, which reads, "I love Prodos." And I started to tell Roger about how truly fabulous I thought I was. Capitalism, radical ideas, Ayn Rand, objectivism, philosophy, business, science, you name it. Of course, dear listener, you know how marvellous your beloved Prodos is. But Roger Kerr had heard it all before, but not about yours truly. And with a tolerant smile on his face, he told me that he had only recently been subjected to some extraordinary serves of extravagant self-praise by a fellow in New Zealand, a radio presenter and admirer, like me, of Ayn Rand. Well, naturally, I was appalled. I was horrified. How hideous, I thought. I was the supreme self-promoter, the doyen of drum beating, the Maharaja of, well, you know what I mean. Well, months later, after I thought I'd recovered from the trauma and got back to what I loosely term normal life, I received an email from a New Zealand fan by the name of Mark Tammet, who will, of course, burn in hell for all eternity. It was about this same fellow. He knew him personally. We really should make contact. He quotes Ayn Rand on his show. He's a terrific fellow. And basically, Mark Tammet pressed all my buttons until, like a mindless automaton, I succumbed and contacted the man who was my special guest today on Prodos.com. Radio Pacific's presenter of the politically incorrect show, editor of The Free Radical, a tireless campaigner for reason and capitalism, online from New Zealand. It gives me great pleasure to welcome to Prodos.com and to find out what makes this man tick. Welcome, Lindsay Perigo. Delighted to have you on board, Lindsay.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry that you now feel constrained to retire from the field, but
well,
you know, as they say, then
the breaks. I had a chance and I blew it. That's it. You know what I mean? I just wasn't good enough.
You did.
Now, are you really that good, Lindsay?
Oh, yes.
I mean, seriously. You would, because I know New Zealanders are very honest. When you ask them a direct question, they always give you a direct answer. They're very straightforward people.
And which is a very positive plus in our favour. It's something that you Australians ought to learn from us. You know the difference between Australians and yogurt, don't you?
No, I don't actually.
Well, yogurt has a culture.
Thanks, Lindsay. That's from the heart, I'm sure.
I thought I should start as I meant to go on.
Absolutely, yes, with total respect and reverence. Now, it's Friday today. Isn't that Inspiration Day on your show?
Yes, it is.
So tell us what you covered on your show today.
Well, as a matter of fact, we covered something which is very dear to my heart. I suspect it's dear to yours, which is how...
Bikinis?
I wouldn't make that claim, but
okay.
I did my best. But how difficult it is to get people to think in principle.
Oh, yeah.
In other words, you would remember Leonard Peikoff's famous story about the time that he spent, I think it was about 6 months, arguing with some fellow wanted to nationalise the steel industry.
Yeah.
And Leonard finally, after months and months of exhaustive, detailed, painstaking argument, won this fellow round. And then the fellow turned to Leonard and said, "But what about the coal industry?"
Yes, I remember that example. Yep, I'm sure many of our objectivist listeners will know that one too.
Well, it's very eloquent, isn't it? And I think that it's both in New Zealand...
We've all experienced that too, of course.
Oh, day by day by day. And
mind you, Lindsay, it's more common amongst educated people because I'm going to ask you about this later, about whether the man in the street, as it were, the non-intellectuals, actually do think in principle. Because I'm big on him. I like the non-intellectuals, the average normal person, whatever that means.
Well, again, I would quote Leonard. Remember when he said that if he had the choice of having dinner with a truck driver or an academic, he would take the truck driver sight unseen.
Is that right?
purely and simply because he had...
Well, what about a radio presenter and a truck driver?
Oh, you'd never, ever have dinner with a radio presenter. Unless you were a radio presenter yourself and knew what you were up against.
Oh, well, I was a radio presenter. This is obviously my last show now.
Yes, I know you've given up because you've been outclassed.
Maybe I can get a job, maybe, wiping the windows or something like that at your place.
You can make coffee for me at Radio Pacific.
Marvellous. Thanks, Lindsay. Now, sorry, so today you were talking about principles, thinking in principles. That is actually, you're right, it's a subject dear to my heart, because, it all comes down to thinking, in my view, Lindsay.
And why is it so hard to get people to think? And when you say think, what you're talking about is not a knee-jerk response to a stimulus, not a gut reaction that is then unarticulated and not taken any further, but you're trying to get people to grasp what is going on in context A and then apply that same thing to context B. Now, I'll give you a good example of this from New Zealand. We recently had our 5-yearly census. Do you have the census in Australia?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. I believe that ours is much more intrusive and personal than yours is.
Oh, ours is catching up, don't worry.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
You've just got GST, which is catching up with us as well.
Right.
But, you see, what I was trying to say to people through the census was, look, it's not a question of, is this information going to be treated confidentially? It's not a question of, is the census enumerator, that is the person who collects the census forms, going to read the stuff that you write? The question is, does the government have the right to demand this information of you at gunpoint in the first place?
No, they don't.
Ask that question. No, they don't. You and I know that.
Yeah.
But you see, making an issue of this, and we made a big issue of it over here, and we had census burning ceremonies, and it was a big deal.
Yeah.
But trying to get the run-of-the-mill listener to identify the principle rather than just get carried away with, oh my God, this information won't be confidential, it'll be passed on to the Inland Revenue Department and so on and so forth, or they shouldn't be asking a question about religion. Trying to get them beyond the concrete to identify the principle, that is the hard part.
That is hard. That is hard, but it can be done. It can be done. That's my experience. You tell me what your experience is, Lindsay.
Well, my experience is the same thing, that it can be done, but you mustn't be overly optimistic. Again, to quote Leonard, remember when At the Shrug came out, he thought the whole world would go laissez-faire in 6 months.
No, okay.
And Ayn Rand gave him a reality check. But there's a great saying that a friend of mine in the United States, a black American libertarian named Richard Boddy, whom he calls Senator Chocolate, and his saying is, and it's so true, people are deceived en masse, but they are enlightened one at a time.
Well, that's a beauty, Lindsay, because, that one of the things, just to talk about radio for a moment, whether it's internet or on air, radio is a very personal medium, and that's one of the things I like about it, and I've always referred to it as the thinking person's medium. And now, of course, on the internet, it really, that it makes that even more so. But do you find that yourself, that you can actually talk directly to a listener / thinker via radio?
Yes, I do, but it's important not to overestimate the extent to which that is happening, because for every listener you get who is enlightened on a one-at-a-time basis, you still have an enormous amount of, social ballast.
Sure.
And I get those coming through as well.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, today, Inspiration Day, I had quite a few of those, and I ended up feeling quite uninspired.
Right.
But at the same time, the other day, I got an email from a 19-year-old listener, a New Zealander, who is now no longer in New Zealand. He's in New York, and he said, because of your radio show, I'm in New York. I wasn't going to hang around in that statist hellhole that is New Zealand. I've come to New York, and I will do whatever it takes to stay here, and I'm going to make my fortune in life.
Well, I mean, that is worth 1,000 negative comments.
Yes.
Okay, so we are in agreement there, really.
Yes.
And you mentioned the term social ballast, and I don't take that as a disrespectful term, because I don't think it's necessarily everybody's job to do the fundamental thinking, but I do encourage people to do it. But as social ballast, it's only the people of intelligence, the thinking, the alert, the active-minded, that matter.
Yes, because it is ideas that change the world.
And it's those individuals, and so that's why I'm saying, see, that fellow in New York, who knows what will become of him? Tomorrow he may I don't know, he might write a book, he might have a child, he might start a business, he might donate $1 million to your show or to mine or to the Ayn Rand Institute. It's the minority that changes the world. Do you agree with that, Lindsay?
Absolutely. Of course it's a minority that changes the world.
I mean, there you are, one person, one man, Lindsay Perigo in New Zealand, and from the research that I've done about your background, you've been fighting a long time.
Well,
and you mean it. You're not mucking around.
No, I'm not mucking around. I don't muck around. And anyone who goes to my website, can I give that a plug right now?
There's a link right there where listeners are listening right now.
www.freeradical.co.nz. And I have a new Objectivist site up also called Solo, and I'm very excited about that.
Yep.
But I think the thing is that, as you would have experienced as well, that you reach a certain number of people, but then each of them goes out and reaches a certain number of other people.
Fantastic.
And it's like what Ayn Rand talked about in The Fountainhead, you know, the underground springs that suddenly burst forth from all sorts of unlikely places.
Well, I love that sort of metaphor because it, to me, it means that progress is not sort of what I call linear. In other words, it's not like you put out an hour of radio or you write two books and now you get two units of change.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it may take 10 years or 20 years and suddenly the Berlin Wall comes down.
Yes, that's it. And you cannot predict it.
You can't. You
can identify the trends that might lead to it, but you cannot say that it will happen or when it will happen or how it will happen. And, you know, this is one of the other frustrations I have. It's a good frustration to have, and I'd be curious to know whether you've experienced it as well, is that you get people who want to know in advance, in humongous detail, how it's going to happen. How long is it going to take? How many people do you need on your side? All those sorts of questions, which there is no possible answer to until it actually happens. The important thing is, make it happen.
Right. Well, I always have a very simple answer, a broad sort of answer to people that do that, and I don't blame them for doing that, because if you're talking about the ideas of reason and capitalism, they are so, so far away from what people are used to. It's not surprising. It's surprising that people like that don't come up and punch me in the face, actually. I'm sure they do it to you.
I've had two death threats in the last 2 days. So,
so there's an invitation, listeners. I'll get your email for people if they want to send some more. But what I always say to people is, look, mate, I look at it personally. In other words, all I can control is what I can control.
Yes.
In other words, I can make my life better and the things around me better.
Yes.
Maybe I'll have no effect. Maybe I will. But as long as I protect myself from the bad and the evil and the destructive and do the right thing, then I become a model, I become an example, I achieve my happiness. And I reckon the question, that line of questioning that people ask, it betrays one thing about them. They're not selfish enough.
Well, in the sense that they want someone else to give them all the answers. Is that what you mean?
Well, I suppose that's true too. But what I mean is, like, for me, because I try and be as selfish as I can be, and the question doesn't even occur to me. You know what I mean? Like all that counts is a philosophy or an idea. Like, if I read about capitalism, I now want to bring my life close to that.
Yes.
And if other people don't go along with it, and if there are other problems along the way, it doesn't matter.
So be it. But
so
you live your life according to your lights.
Well, is that the right way here?
I mean, well, I think it is. And all I say to my adversaries is, look, my philosophy demands nothing of you, but you demand of me my time, my money, and my life. Is that a fair deal?
Right.
If you're talking about fairness, let's be fair.
Yeah.
Let us both strike a deal on the same terms that I will demand nothing of you and I don't, and you reciprocate, and after that you believe whatever you want to. Worship totem poles, whatever you want to do.
Yeah,
that's fine.
That's a good strategy, Lindsay, because in a way you're saying, let's get back down to the basics and what really counts. Let's not fiddle around with the perimeter.
Yes.
Let's go back and see, you know, what counts is that you're free and I'm free.
Yes.
What counts is that you own your life, I own my life.
Yes.
We respect that. Let's get back to basics and let's build on that. Let's not, you know, get twiddle about, you know, and fiddle while Rome burns. It's all that's irrelevant rubbish.
Yeah. Well, I'll just add to that, you know, coming back to social ballast, one day I made the theme of my program the question, who owns your life?
Ah, wonderful.
And, you know, I would say 95% of the respondents said, well, I do, of course. Now, many of these were people who ordinarily would vote for our current Labour Party or the Alliance, you know, left-wing parties who say, in effect, that your life belongs to society or to the government or the state. But when they're confronted with that actual question, they say, well, why do you even bother asking it? Of course I own my life. And at moments like that, you get tremendous hope because you're bringing it down to a common sense level, asking a question that is not too abstract, but is very direct and pertinent, and they come up with the right answer, and you think, yahoo!
Yeah, you can build on that, you see?
Yes.
That's perfect. We're going to take a quick break and be back in just a moment with Lindsay Perigo online in New Zealand on chronos.com.
Discover the power.
Discover the power of ideas. My special guest today, Lindsay Perigo, who presents the politically incorrect show in New Zealand and is the editor of The Free Radical. There are links right there to listen to where you're looking right now on the site. We're looking. One of the things I want to look at, Lindsay, is you know what works and what does not work in the fight for the right. And I don't mean right as in right wing. Well, it's a bit of a pun there. I mean for the right values. In other words, what... You know, have you changed your views over the years, Lindsay?
Oh, my God, I...
Because I was a commie.
I was a commie
bastard years ago.
My grandfather was the leader of the New Zealand Communist Party.
That's a classic. I can't beat that. My dad was a cheesemaker.
And a communist cheesemaker.
Well, sort of. He was a fascist, actually.
Oh, my God. Well, of course...
My dad was one of these old Greeks that actually believed that Hitler wasn't such a bad bloke, and that if Greece hadn't annoyed him, he wouldn't have, you know, chopped their heads off.
Your dad must still be alive, because I have someone ringing my show who says exactly that.
No, he's dead. He's gone. He's gone to that fascist in the sky.
I assure you, Prados, his ghost is alive and well. He rings me.
Okay, he's got a strong Greek accent, I suppose.
Yes.
All right. So, were you a lefty once upon a time?
Oh, absolutely, and not just your run-of-the-mill lefty. Yeah. I was dedicated. You see, my grandfather, as I say, he was leader of the Communist Party, and he bequeathed all of these books, and they were marvellous books in the sense that they dealt with the big issues, and you know Marxism is a consistent, self-consistent, internally integrated philosophy, and in the absence of a better alternative, you think, my God, if the alternative to that is Christianity, you go for Marxism every time, don't you?
Well, I personally, yes.
Yes.
Because I was, in those days when I was a Marxist, I was searching for what I considered to be a scientific social system.
Exactly.
And that's what Marxism promised. Of course, it ended up being a whole lot of dogma and, you know, faith-based dogma, but that's another story.
But it's very, very clever, and it is internally self-consistent. Yeah. Now, it falls apart, of course, when you look at the basic premises.
Yeah.
But I would have to say that it took Ayn Rand to wake me up to that.
So you went from being a lefty to being an Ayn Rand admirer?
No.
Okay. So,
not directly. I had a period in between where I was your typical modern, cool cynic, believing in nothing in particular.
Right.
Which is very, very common over here in New Zealand. I'm not sure what it's like in Australia. But
we're all drugged out up here.
Well, drugged out here too, but militantly drugged out. This is the state of mind that you ought to aspire to. That's the way it is here.
All right.
You chew gum. When you speak, it's unintelligible. You mumble. And your basic motto in life is, who gives a shit? Can I say that word? I just have. That is the attitude that I fell into, having become disillusioned with Marxism, and then concluding that if that's not true, then nothing can be true. And then introduced me to Ayn Rand, and I read it with a very cynical eye.
Who was the friend?
His name was Bill Waddell. He is now dead, and he was the brother of a broadcasting colleague, a wonderful, wonderful broadcaster named Jessica Waddell.
Right.
Who really should have had a career in Hollywood as an actress. I mean, she was just marvellous.
Right.
But she introduced me to her brother. And the way it happened was quite funny, because this guy, Bill Waddell, would write letters to the paper and sign them W.R. Waddell, Pinehaven, which is an area close to Wellington. And they were, to me, quite unintelligible letters about metaphysics and epistemology, and he would write them every second or third day.
To you?
No, to the paper, to the local newspaper.
Gotcha.
And I said to Jessica, this guy Waddell, who has the same surname as you, is he related to you? And she said, darling, he's my brother. And by the way, darling, I want you to interview him.
She obviously had some very persuasive means and succeeded.
Well, she was my boss, so if she said, you're going to interview him, I had to interview him.
Oh, good for you then.
And you see, I mean, I cringe now with embarrassment, but it's very funny, because when I interviewed him, he came into the studio, and I said, okay, Bill, tell me the basics of objectivism. Let's start from scratch here. And so he said,
what year was that, Lindsay?
Oh, 1802 or something. It was a few years ago.
Okay.
And I said, tell me the basics, and he said, existence exists. And I said, well, of course it does. Who on earth would dispute that? And of course, I wasn't at that stage aware, though I knew Karl Marx and all, but I mean, Karl Marx never said existence didn't exist. I was not aware that, you know, there were centuries of philosophy, philosophers who cast doubt on whether existence existed or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, he went away after that interview. He got a tape of it. And his favorite sparring partner at the time, believe it or not, was a Thomist priest.
Right.
And of course, they didn't agree about anything, but they loved arguing.
Oh, yeah, they're good, those guys.
And they just died laughing at me saying, well, who would ever dispute that existence existed?
Right, yeah.
But anyway, it went from there, and we met privately at Jessica's home,
yeah.
And I was only interested in politics at that time, and
right.
I would be discussing things with Bill, political issues, and he would keep bringing me back to more basic issues. And in frustration, one night, I said to him, for God's sake, Bill, you bring every conversation back to, does that chair you're sitting on exist or not? And he leapt up out of the chair and he said, yes, you're right, I do, you've got it.
Right.
And when I went away and thought about it,
yes.
I realized the importance of epistemology. And so I went on from there to read Ayn Rand, and I particularly loved, although it wasn't epistemological, I loved the Romantic Manifesto.
Right.
Because I'm very big on aesthetics. If you visit my solo site, you will see that. That's mainly what it's all about.
Yeah.
And I believe that there's a huge gap.
You need to lose that beard, by the way.
What's that?
Lose that beard.
Oh, come on. That is an aesthetic masterpiece. You haven't seen its current incarnation.
Oh, I can't
But wait. I do want to say, I believe that objectivists have a problem in this day and age, which is that they have not brought their aesthetics into line with their epistemology and metaphysics. I won't say any more if you don't want me to, but I think
it's a huge issue.
I'm
not afraid of the issue, but objectivism is a very new philosophy, and many of us are still finding our way through it.
Sure.
Lindsay. And
yes.
You know, freedom is it's not entirely new, but it's just a flicker across the face of human history.
Yes, but what a flicker!
And Ayn Rand it defines the very source of that,
yes.
of that fire.
Yes.
So to me, I'd be surprised if there wasn't conflict and misunderstanding about Ayn Rand's philosophy. She died only 17 years ago, didn't she?
1982.
I'll
tell you something. Even it fell to me as a broadcaster to read the news bulletin that announced her death.
Right.
On the breakfast program in New Zealand called Morning Report, and she died, I think it was March something.
Right.
And the news bulletin was handed to me to read, and I wasn't forewarned or anything.
Right.
And this was just a few months into my encounter with the philosophy.
Right.
And it fell to me to read that she had died.
Right.
And I'm choking up about it now.
Yeah.
I only just made my way through that news item.
Yeah. Let's take a break. We'll be back in a moment on Protoss.com. To lateral thinking, from business ideas to entertainment, Protoss.com brings you fresh thinking daily. Discover the power of ideas. My special guest today online from New Zealand, Lindsay Perigo, who presents the politically incorrect show and who edits the Free Radical. In fact, the Free Radical, Lindsay, you created that, didn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Back in 1994, after I'd done my dash with broadcasting, and there was a very famous bust-up that occurred when I left Television New Zealand and pronounced it brain dead. It was at the time they were dumbing down news and current affairs, and I said, you know, you have turned current affairs into which Hollywood celebrity is currently having an affair with which other Hollywood celebrity.
Yeah.
And at that point I thought, well, now is the time for me to come out of the ideological closet, because I've spent 20 years of my professional career interviewing people about their opinions, which for the most part, and especially latterly, I have regarded as garbage.
Right.
Now is the time for me to state my own opinions, and I think the best vehicle for that is a magazine. And
yeah,
so
someone told me that you actually said about yourself that you had been an intellectual slut.
What I meant by that was that when you're a professional interviewer, you have to, in playing the part of devil's advocate, you say things privately you're probably quite horrified at, but you take a stance for the sake of taking a different stance from that of your interviewee.
Part of it is theatre.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And I think I did that role very conscientiously.
Like, I'm pretending that I like you at the moment. Just go on, sorry.
Well, liking me is not mandatory for the next 5 minutes. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
In that role, you do... there is an imperative upon you, at least the way it has traditionally been conceived. I mean, it's different if it's an overtly, let's say, free market television station that says we're here to promote free market ideas and all our interviewers will express free market ideas, etc.
Yeah.
But, you see, this was state-run television.
Sure.
And we had a charter that said that we were to be neutral on all matters of public contention.
Sure.
And so...
fair enough, too.
In pursuit of that supposed neutrality, you would take the opposing point of view from that of your interviewee. And that's what I meant by intellectual slut. It got me into terrible trouble with someone who's probably quite a close friend of yours, Gary Hull. But I explained it to him.
No, he's not a friend of mine, no. He's been on the show, though.
Well, he wrote me a letter about it because he heard about it. I didn't tell him about it, but he heard about it. And I explained the context to him. And as a matter of fact, I recover this ground in an article I've written for the next issue of my magazine, or I say the next issue, but it is actually out, it came out today.
Yeah.
I have written a review of David Kelly's The Contested Legacy of Ayn Rand,
right,
and I have turned it into
The David Kelly.
Part critique and part personal memoir.
Right.
And, you know, among the things I discuss is the whole question of the style with which objectivists conduct themselves and present their philosophy. Now, as you know, I have a problem with the way the ARI does. I also have a problem with the way the TOC does.
Right.
I believe, first and foremost, I'm a very passionate person, and I don't believe that there's any inherent reason/passion dichotomy. If you have a reasonable philosophy, it goes without saying that you should be passionate about it.
Yeah.
And I think that what we have, as you point out, it's a very short history that objectivism has had. But on the one hand, you've had reason without passion, and passion without reason. And what I hope to do, my little contribution, is to bring the two into line.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm a big fan of the Iron Institute, but I know a lot of listeners have a bit of a problem. And it's an issue that's really beyond, you know, the scope of what I can talk about intelligently and in an informed way. But let's talk a bit more about Lindsay Perigo. Now, Lindsay, do you believe that you've had an influence on people like Roger Kerr, the New Zealand Business Roundtable? No, is that funny or what? Sorry, I'm just a naive Aussie. People look at me and start laughing.
I wish Roger were here right now.
Don't worry, he's been on the show a couple of times.
Yes.
He's a good bloke, I like Roger.
Roger is one of those people who started from a position of, well, he's a Hayekian. Do I need to say any more?
Friedrich Hayek, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And his primary concern about a policy proposal is, would this be efficient?
Sure.
Would it increase the rate of GDP?
Sure.
And would it reduce the percentage of GDP that is represented by taxation. All those,
well,
those
they're
sorts
they're
of
good questions. They're good questions.
They're good questions as far as they go.
Sure.
But what I've said to Roger all along is, Roger, all of this is secondary.
Right.
The primary issue.
You said to him, "Does that chair exist?" Is that what you said to him?
No, we didn't get down to that. that's in the future.
You're going to whittle him.
No, you haven't got to the chair yet.
You're going
to
whittle him.
But I have got him to the position of freedom.
Right.
And he now, you know, I joke with him. Have you used the F word lately, Roger?
What's the F word? Oh, freedom. Okay.
Yes.
Freedom. Okay.
And. Just recently, he got a bit shirty with me because we were having an argument. It was a very public debate about, you know, we have the statutory monopoly here over the marketing of apples and pears and things.
Yeah, we've got a few of those in Australia, and there aren't many countries that don't have something like that.
No, well, we certainly have it here, and it still goes on. And I went on air and I said, look, you know, there's only one issue here. Who owns the apples and pears? And they have the right to market them as they see fit. And then I drew a distinction between my approach to the issue and that of Roger Kerr's Business Roundtable and a political party here we have called ACT, which is also a Hayekian party. And I said that they will agree with statutory monopoly if they can be persuaded that it works efficiently.
Right.
And there's a prominent businessman here who hit the nail on the head where he said the Business Roundtable, which is Roger's group, would support slavery if they could be persuaded that it was efficient.
Sure.
And their only argument against it is that it's not efficient.
Right.
Now, Roger and I have had this ongoing, it's like a running gag, really, but yes, I believe, and he might balk at this suggestion, you can ask him, but I believe that I have made him aware of freedom as an issue, and I believe that he's actually now aware that it is the issue.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's your job in a way, without, you know, and it's my job too, it's the job of those of us who are into the field of ideas and the debate of ideas to put them forward and sell those ideas. And people like Roger, see now, there's a good example, and really Roger is representative of the better type of business activist. Would you agree with that?
Up to a point. You see, Roger...
They come much better than like the New Zealand Business Roundtable are fantastic.
No, but no, I wouldn't say they're fantastic, because they were instrumental... They were instrumental in getting the GST introduced here, and they think it's wonderful, and they still think it's wonderful, and you've just now brought it in Australia.
Yeah.
And what I say to them is, why is one form of coercion superior to another?
Yeah.
The problem here is that it is a form of coercion.
Yeah.
You've actually done worse out of it, because at least when it was brought in here, the income tax was drastically slashed.
Right.
You had a marginal slashing, as I understand
it,
of the income
pathetic.
Tax rate and the GST. It's no wonder John Howard is suddenly so unpopular.
Oh, everything has gone up so expensive now.
Yes.
Because, you see, because it's also intercepted the cash economy,
yes.
It means that prices have gone up more than just the GST.
Yes.
You see?
Can I ask you a question?
Do, please.
Why is there so little libertarian sentiment, and I mean that in the best sense of the term, in Australia compared with New Zealand? You see, I think that the one thing I can say for New Zealand is that per capita, I would say there is more libertarianism here and more objectivism as well, because unlike other places, most libertarians in New Zealand are objectivists.
Okay.
But there doesn't appear to be anything in Australia apart from your radio program.
There is one other, well, not objectivist, but I prefer the classical liberal rather than libertarian, but let's use the term libertarian for the moment. Why? Well, it's in the hands of the wrong people. Can we put it that way? We've got a number of reasonable think tanks. We've got a number of reasonable business groups. What can I say? Read The New Australian, put out by Jerry Jackson, a daily internet magazine, and he kicks the hell out of the right in Australia.
Yeah.
And I have to say, even though I respect a lot of our leaders on the right and our think tanks, Jerry has some good points. Jerry Jackson, I always happy to promote him. I don't know why. I can't answer your question. All I can say is that it must have an obvious answer. In other words, cowardice and lack of thought. What else can there be? And the other, let's put the other... Sorry, Lindsay, but let me put the question in reverse in a way, and that is there's an explanation why New Zealand has some good people, and that is because those people, like yourself, are fighting. You see, you know what I mean? All we need, when you're talking about the good people, you're really only talking about a handful.
Yes.
Australia could change tomorrow if five or six good people got together and fought hard.
I know, but that's what strikes me as so extraordinary.
Well, they've done it in New Zealand, and they're doing it in New Zealand, but they're not doing it in Australia.
But you have 16 million people, we have three.
Well,
and you know, you Australians like to say that New Zealand is all sheep, and I use the term myself regularly on my radio show. I refer to the people as the sheeple. But we have that handful that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Australia does not. And the other thing is Australians have a reputation for being bolshy and not wanting to be bossed around, and New Zealanders have the reputation for being docile, but we have more of this libertarian sentiment in New Zealand than in Australia.
Well, all I can say is good on you, New Zealand. You should be proud of what you're doing. It's wonderful, and you know, I just take my hat off to you. That's all I can say.
As well you might, Protos.
Well, we're just about out of time, Lindsay, and I'm sure listeners are enjoying our talk enormously, but perhaps if you could put on your Professor Perrigo hat for a moment and tell us what you think, what is the lesson for people that want to fight for good ideas, for liberty and for reason? What would you advise
them?
Do it. So, well, from the years of experience, could you distill, is there a fundamental lesson that has come through for you that, in a sense, that drives you today?
Yes, I think it is this, that before you start to do it, you have this preconception that your enemies are 10 feet tall because they run the place. They dominate the media. They dominate the way we think. And that's a formidable set of obstacles to overcome. But, you know, when you actually look them in the eye and challenge them, you realize there is nothing there. And that they're not only not 10 feet tall, they're not 10 inches tall.
And you remind them that the name Perrigo is Portuguese
for danger.
Danger. Lindsay Perrigo, delighted to have you on the show today on Protos.com. We hope we can catch up again very soon.
I hope so too.
Stop.